Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest is Vincent W. Van Gogh, the nephew of the great painter, who was easily the foremost authority on the life and work and writings of his uncle. Mr. Van Gogh, whose profession is engineering, is well known for his lectures, writings, and wonderful collection of Van Gogh's paintings. He is a lifelong trustee of the Stedelijk Museum in Amsterdam and director of the Van Gogh Foundation. The art book, which will be the stimulus to this evening's session of Books and the Artist, is called Van Gogh, A Self-Portrait, and consists of letters revealing his life as a painter, selected by W.H. Auden, the English poet. It was published by the New York Graphic Society, and it owes its existence to the three-volume edition of the complete letters of Vincent Van Gogh, published in 1958 by the New York Graphic Society, which really means the complete, definitive, and final edition. I now take great pleasure in introducing Mr. Vincent W. Van Gogh, and shall ask him, as a starter, to tell us what brings him to the United States at this time. Mr. Van Gogh, good evening to you.
Good evening, Mr. Cummings. Thank you for your welcome. This time, I brought over an exhibition of the paintings and drawings of Vincent van Gogh, my uncle. They are on show now. This exhibition consists of 80 paintings and 60 drawings representing all the periods of Vincent's life. It is really a very large exhibition, and I'm glad that it is here in this country now.
I think we ought to say this isn't the first time you've done such a thing. I wonder if this exhibition is different from some of the other shows that you've mounted in this way before, Mr. Van Gogh.
Mr. Cumming, the important, well-known paintings are there, but the smaller paintings we change from time to time. Several ones which have not been shown, but that is not the main point. Most of the paintings do have an appeal for people.
By this time, some of them are very well known. I'd now like to take you back about half a century to the time when you were a very young person and ask you, what is your first memory of Van Gogh the painter?
I must have been looking at these paintings the first time I opened my eyes in the cradle. After all, I was born in the house and not in a hospital.
Yes.
And there were paintings all around on the walls. I have known since that time, always in my mother's house, for my father died when I was very young, I've always known them hanging on the wall. The three flowering orchards always have been there. The potato eaters hang in our living and dining room. I can't imagine any house I lived in without having Van Gogh paintings all around.
You're much to be envied. I must ask you now, when you first became aware of the letters, we're talking about a book after all, and the letters are the basis of this book. These two are terribly important to you, I'm sure.
Indeed they are. As long as I remember, my mother was busy sorting the letters. There was a drawer in a sideboard where there were all of them, mostly without envelopes, many of them not dated, and my mother has always been busy arranging them according to dates. And finally, that was in 1914, just before the war, the first publication. And at the end of the war, a few years, we lived in New York. My mother came over and lived with my wife and myself. And she started then translating the letters, because in her youth she had studied the English language and started the translation.
We're talking about these letters as though everyone knew exactly what they are, but I'm sure there's some who don't know too much about them. How do you describe them? What are they, and why are they so important to an understanding of their author?
The larger part of these letters are letters from Vincent to Theo, his brother, my father. The other letters, the other 150, let's say, are to other artists or acquaintances. Theo was the only person at the time who supported Vincent, who liked his paintings, and who helped Vincent financially. It was the only bright spot in Vincent's life, and therefore he is very open and writes to his brother what is in his mind. He describes the paintings he has on the way. He says he's always full of thoughts for paintings and describes these thoughts. Then very often he adds small sketches, very spontaneous sketches of the paintings he is making or that he is going to make. And therefore it is so right that Mr. Auden selected in this new book, especially the letters dealing with the paintings themselves.
Yes. Well, having worked on them now for 4 or 5 years myself in a very modest way as one of the editors of these books, first in the 3-volume selection and then in Auden's, I can say that simply his writing is good literature. I know of nothing in the history of art to equal them. They've been elevated to the position of a literary masterpiece by the critical apparatus of the press here in America, both the newspapers and the magazines. I remember one fellow went so far as to say that if suddenly all the paintings should vanish, Van Gogh would still be a great master in this other field of self-expression. Now, what do you feel is the key to Vincent's greatness as an author, quite apart from a wonderful chronicle of his short life as a painter?
The letters make interesting reading, Mr. Cumming. A book of the size of the 3-volume edition contains 1,800 pages and cannot be read from one end to the other by any person. It's too much for that. But the letters are interesting. And my experience has been that when I presented them to people who were not versed in questions of art, they took up the book, started reading at the beginning of any chapter or somewhere in between, and it interested them, and they went on reading. And I describe that to the fact that there is such a human appeal in these letters. Vincent was an extremely sensitive person and very much aware of his moods, and he knew how to describe them in simple words.
Yes, that's very, very true. Don't you feel that he makes the business of being a painter, not the business, but let's call it the profession, something all of us can become absorbed in through his own struggles, through his own words, through his own eyes? Never before was I aware of the amount of observation a painter uses in a single field. He can go on about one field for 3 pages and never repeat himself. And this is by no means a dull experience. It's quite a thrilling one. He's good on clouds, as you remember.
He's good on clouds, on portraits, on landscapes, all kind of things. But what makes him famous, we should look for in another corner, I believe. There was Jean-Paul Sartre, who explained what happened to someone when he's looking at a painting. In the first place, this person, this spectator or contemplator, is making a discovery. And people are apt to say, oh, well, here is this painter. That's a beautiful painting. This painter sees it just as I do. Of course, it should be the other way around, for it would mean that the painter makes me aware that there is such and such a vision. So there is the discovery. After this discovery come the associations. When one looks at a beautiful landscape, well, one may have a souvenir of a vacation somewhere, holidays.
Yeah.
But after all, the third point is the most important. The contemplator looks for the vision of the artist.
If he doesn't look for it consciously, he eventually sees it.
He certainly does, but a contemplator doesn't care for a portrait of somebody whom he doesn't know.
Tell me, Mr. Van Gogh, is he as strongly admired abroad as he is in America, this great artist?
Vincent is admired, Mr. Cumming, in all the Western European countries. There's no doubt about it. But in general, I find that the interest in things artistic is greater in America than it is in most of the other countries, perhaps with the exception of France. For if we look at the number of visitors to the museums here in this country, we Europeans are jealous.
I don't blame them. I think they ought to hear parts of this program. Every time I go to France, I'm made very, very aware of the fact that we have no culture over here, that we never go to museums, and it's very difficult to prove to them that we do.
Oh, but I assure you of the contrary, you know.
You've seen both of us, both the French and the Americans. This recognition did come to him first, though, in Europe. There's no doubt about it. We were at least a generation behind. And I believe, I may be wrong, but I believe, first of all, outside his own land, the Germans were the first, weren't they, to show his works?
The very first exhibitions were 2, 3, and 4 years after Vincent's death in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, that's his own country, yes.
Exhibitions were held in Germany and in France. But the German interest before 1900 was very important.
Very important, very great. Yes. I want to go back to the letters a moment. Do you think that these remarkable letters that he has left, and which I believe he never felt would ever be read by anyone but Theo, or perhaps the other few people who wrote them to him, have helped people to appreciate his pictures?
The letters have helped to people to appreciate his pictures, but he was already recognized before the letters were published. In the first edition of the letters, the 1914 one, my mother writes in the introduction that she did not want to publish the letters before Vincent was recognized through his paintings. She thought it would be unfair to him to do otherwise.
I think that was a fairly important decision to make. It certainly worked.
Indeed.
Did the artist, did Vincent realize his own stature as an artist?
I think he did.
You're convinced that he did.
He did. He writes in one of his letters that he is sure that after he shall be gone, the people will continue to talk about his work. So there you have, in a nutshell, what he thought himself.
He didn't seem to spend very much time worrying about recognition or lack of recognition. I felt that he was constantly worried because his brother was supporting him, and that he always hoped and felt that in the end, eventually, it would come back. But he didn't live long enough, probably.
He didn't live long enough. He was recognized by his contemporaries, that is to say, the painters of that period. He was a friend of Toulouse-Lautrec, of Signac, of Bernard, and others also took note of his work. So his own generation, his own professional comrades, did recognize him as being a professional painter. Now, it is a different matter that he didn't sell at that time. But this is a point I don't wonder so much at. When you have a young fellow who starts to paint, he follows the academy or college or another school, and when he's 20, he starts out as a young painter, may have some exhibition here or there, but when he is 30 and he is able to have exhibitions of his own work, one-man shows, and when he's starting to sell at a moderate rate, people say, well, he didn't do so badly. And now if we realize that Vincent painted for 7 years only, it is not so to be wondered at that he didn't sell. Right after his death, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years after, the interest in the exhibitions of his one-man shows was very, very great. So we just didn't live long enough.
This I'm awfully glad to have you say. I think a great many people have unconsciously and quite naturally associated a kind of romantic myth with Vincent, the real person. They think of him as a starving artist, the typical 19th century figure, never recognized, never paid, and finally dying tragically. Some of these things obviously come out of the facts, but the very fact that he only painted for 7 years is a very telling one, and it takes a good deal more than 7 years anywhere today, in any country, for a man to go through the mill, be recognized, and begin to sell. It's kind of a pity, I think, that Vincent wasn't living in a time when he could teach in a university and support himself by teaching, as so many painters in America do.
In my younger years in Holland, all the painters, even the well-known painters, subsisted either on teaching or having pupils, like in the 17th century. And it is only very few who lived on the sales of their work.
I wonder if Vincent would have been a good teacher. Would he have been... He loved people. He wanted to help them. I wonder if he would have had the patience with individuals.
He might have been a good teacher or might not have been. But if he would have been a good teacher, he certainly wouldn't have worked so hard and painted so many of these beautiful paintings.
You're correct.
And written so many of these beautiful letters.
Yes, he's totally absorbed for those short years, really, in the one thing, in the art of being an artist. Mr. Van Gogh, the more one reads the letters, the more one realizes the importance of Theo in Van Gogh's life. He gave literally everything one person can give to another in the world of art. Would you like to comment here from the point of view of what one learns from reading Vincent's letters and what from your own personal knowledge of this remarkable relationship?
Mr. Cumming, Theo was the only bright point in Vincent's life. And therefore, we believe that the brightness and the warmth of many of his paintings are due to the great love he had for his brother. That is about the best comment I can give in relation to your question. And about the relationship, well, there are more of these relationships in history and in life in general of two brothers, the one being quite absorbed in the other. And here we have one of the remarkable cases of it.
He is the silent partner, to use a kind of a poor cliche in this respect. It's a pity there aren't more letters left from Theo to Vincent.
There are no others. The ones that there are
the ones that
have
there
been
are
published in, have. And are in the three-volume edition.
Yes, they
and
are.
I also am sorry that there are no others.
It is a pity. But in his case, actions spoke perhaps more profoundly than words. His help and his support and his constant understanding, this is the remarkable thing. I don't believe he ever did criticize Van Gogh as a painter, did he, his brother? He may have criticized him occasionally as a person for getting into
his may have, here and may there. have criticized or may have talked about his works verbally.
Yes.
Person to person.
Yes.
But he was so wise as just to accept Vincent with his difficulties and just admire whatever he could admire. For it is very dangerous to come before a painting and say, oh, I don't like this and I don't like that. The critical attitude towards paintings is very dangerous, I believe. It's better to quote Vincent here, who says, when I am painting a model, I try to find what is worthy and good in this man, and that I try to put in. And I think with paintings, the general public shouldn't be so critical, but just try to admire what there is to admire. And in the letters, it's the same. A lot of people will say, well, this is... in the original languages, French and Dutch, it's not grammatically correct. But that doesn't matter. The main thing is that the thoughts expressed are, and they are clear and distinct.
Yes. Well, the language certainly is good language as it comes over into English. There's no problem there. Apart from the letters, this is sort of a technical question, Mr. Van Gogh. What else can anyone read to become better acquainted and more aware of Vincent and his works?
Mr. Cumming, there are a lot of books on Vincent, but most of them are picture books with a small amount of comment. There is the Nordenfalk book, which is out of print, I believe, but which one can find in the libraries. And then the one thing that can be said is that all books on Vincent, without exception, are founded on the letters. The facts that you find in any book on Van Gogh is taken from the letters.
Yes. Well, I think that's the best answer. No one could be more precise about Vincent the painter than Vincent himself. And that's one reason we called the book Van Gogh, A Self-Portrait. I feel that it's impossible to isolate Vincent the painter from Vincent the writer. His pictures seem to have germinated and been born in his letters. Would you like to comment on the drawings, this closeness between the two? Which came first, the drawing, the idea of the picture, the letter?
Probably the idea for a painting came first, then came the sketch, and then came the drawing, maybe two drawings, maybe four drawings, maybe a lot of sketches of details, and then came the painting.
When did he begin to paint actually as a painter? I may be wrong about this, but it seems to me in the early letters, drawing is the one thing that he emphasizes and he continually practices. Then bit by bit we discover the use of oils and the use of colors and so on.
For the first 2 years he made drawings only. And they show that he worked very, very hard. He never stopped and took the same subject again and again and again. And always worked very fast. And one thing he did not do was correct and correct and correct the same drawing. He preferred starting a new one so that it retained its freshness. For very often, there are painters who correct and correct and correct, and all the freshness is gone and all the spontaneity is gone. But his drawings are so lively.
This is certainly self-imposed discipline. Was it consciously done this way, or is it natural that one starts with drawing and then goes towards the fuller expression in the painting itself?
Well, we live in a free country, Mr. Cumming, and everybody may do it the way he likes.
I think you're being very polite. In comparison to the way art is taught in some schools. I felt that he was sort of obeying the restrictions of the time. He does speak of drawings. He does speak of prints. He compares the prints that he's hanging on his wall with things that he's working at. The black and white came first, did it not, in this sense?
The black and white came first. But one shouldn't forget that at that time there was no photography, and the illustrations in the illustrated papers, the few that there were then, were drawings brought by another artist on a lithographic stone or cut in wood.
Yes. Yes.
And there has been a period when preparing these illustrations for the illustrated magazines was quite an important artistic feature.
Mr. Van Gogh, the time is getting on. We haven't said very much about the book itself. Our publication, Van Gogh, A Self-Portrait, is obviously one man's choice. But it is the choice of a gifted and remarkably expressive man, Auden the poet, who had a love for the letters and a great admiration for Vincent. Do you feel that a book of this kind, Vincent perhaps seen through the eyes of a poet, fills a certain need, at least in the sense of a one-volume condensation?
There certainly is a need for a book of this size, Mr. Cumming. It is impossible for anyone to read the three volumes. Besides, the three volumes, though they are a beautiful edition, cost a lot of money. It's not for everybody just to start to have them. So it is all right that there is another book of which some essence of Vincent the painter radiates.
I'm sure you have certain reservations Everyone has a right, as you say, to his own opinions. Can you think of any other way such a book, a one-volume book of the letters, could have been made?
Well, this is a book where Mr. Auden selected the doings of Vincent as a painter and as an artist. Well, one can publish a lot of books. One can write a lot of articles on the relation of Vincent to the still life, the relation of Vincent to his parents, the relation to Vincent to marriage, the relation of Vincent to the 17th century
yes.
Dutch painter.
And some of it's been done.
These books give the full scope to everybody to look for what interests him most, and that, I think, is the most important part of it.
Yes. I have time for one more question, and since this is so very much of a family, the Van Gogh family, you spoke of your mother once. It seems to me that she, as much as any one person, is responsible for what we have here today. Would you like to comment once more, a little more fully, on the work she did, the spade work, really, in getting together this material, preserving it?
Indeed, as I told before, for years and years she used her spare time, which was not enormous because she had to work for her living. She devoted her time just to arranging these letters, have them retyped. After all, they're not always easy to read. The handwriting may be very small. And just made a whole of it so that she lived with them very thoroughly.
And the first edition of the letters came out in Dutch?
In the original languages. Two-thirds in Dutch, one-third in the French language.
In the French language. And how long was that?
That was in 1914.
1914. No,
that was the
over 20 years then. The process of bringing this material out took more than 20 years.
Took more than 20 years, mm-hmm. Indeed.
Well, I'm glad that she had the time and the patience. I want to thank you, too. No program of 30 minutes can possibly do justice to this wonderful subject, but you're very nice to come and talk to us about it, and thank you so much.
Well, the pleasure has been all mine, Mr. Cummings.
You have been listening to a conversation with V.W. Van Gogh, the nephew of Vincent Van Gogh, whose paintings are currently being exhibited at the Guggenheim Museum. Mr. Van Gogh was talking with Burton Cumming, Director of Publications for the New York Graphic Society. Listen is a regular feature on WRVR, heard each weekday evening at 10:30. Tomorrow night on Listen, Marja Manis talks about one of her favorite topics, the mass media. Next Tuesday night, Listen will bring the dedication ceremonies of the Protestant Center at the New York World's Fair. On Wednesday, a visit with the New York Woodwind Quintet, and on future programs, you will be able to listen to Sergeant Shriver, Langston Hughes, Edith Piaf, and the opening of the New York World's Fair. We Shall Overcome has become the symbol for the minority groups of our country in their spirited struggle for civil and human rights. One way you can help is to be informed, and to be informed, WRVR presents three regularly scheduled programs each week. Civil Rights Report is heard each weekday at 6:40 and 11:20. Breakthrough, a weekly report from Madison S. Jones of the New York City Commission on Human Rights, is broadcast each Saturday evening at 6:45. And There Are Things to Do with Dr. Anna Arnold Hedgman of the National Council of Churches can be heard each Sunday at 12:45 p.m. Be informed of the latest civil rights developments by listening to WRVR 106.7 FM in New York City. It is now 11 p.m.